This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm David Greene. Today, in Your Health, we are answering your questions about the federal health law, the Affordable Care Act. Now, the biggest changes being made by the law are set to begin less than 3 months from now. October 1st is when people can start signing up for coverage in new state health exchanges for insurance that would start next January 1st. We know people are more than a little confused, and 2 weeks ago, we asked what you most wanted to know about the new health law. You were not shy, we should say. Our inbox was stuffed, and as promised, we've brought NPR's Julie Rovner into the studio to answer some of the most common queries. You will also find some more of your questions answered on the web at our website, npr.org. But let's get right to it. Julie, thanks for coming in. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, so before we dive into the finer points of this, let's start with something very basic. How do people sign up for this coverage? I mean, is there a website that they go to? They get a packet in the mail? What happens?
Well, it's not automatic. People will have to take some action. The government's trying to make it as easy as possible. Last week, the federal government relaunched its website, healthcare.gov. There's lots of information there on how to get ready to sign up. Remember, nothing happens till October 1st, and states and other organizations are launching huge publicity campaigns to get the word out starting just about now. Most of the actual sign-up activity will take place online, but there are also paper applications, and literally thousands of people are being trained this summer to help guide people through the process. So really, the actual mechanics are probably the last thing people should be worrying about right now.
Other things, even if they don't have the internet, they'll be able to sign up. I mean,
yes,
paper options.
There will be ways to help people sign up.
Good to know. Okay, that we got the basic out of the way. Let's turn to some other questions from our listeners. Here's the first one.
My name is Marcia Harmon, and I live in Chicago, Illinois. I'm currently employed part-time, and I pay for my own health insurance. It's not through my employer. So I'm just not sure if I'll be eligible to participate in the exchanges or to take advantage of the tax credit to purchase insurance. How will that work?
Julie?
This is one of the biggest misconceptions about the exchanges, that they're only for people who don't have insurance. Now, the big campaigns you'll be seeing in the coming weeks are aimed mostly at the uninsured, but the exchanges are most definitely open to people like Ms. Harmon and anyone else who buys their own insurance. In fact, there are about 14 million people in the individual insurance market now. That includes people like the questioner here who work part-time and don't qualify for benefits, people who are self-employed, or people who may have retired early and don't qualify for Medicare yet, but it's been very difficult to get insurance through the individual market for a variety of reasons, and it's been very expensive for people who do have it. It's considered the most dysfunctional part of the health insurance system, and a big part of building these exchanges has been an effort to fix that.
Okay, well, Marcia Harmon wasn't alone. I mean, we had a lot of people who seem eager to buy insurance, but there were some people as well who don't sound that eager and are worried about the part of the law that goes into effect in January that requires most people to have insurance or pay a penalty. And here's one of those people.
My name is Daniel Salgado, and I'm from Eustis, Florida. I've heard that the amount for people to qualify for assistance in terms of income for individuals is as low as $11,000. Now, in my case, I certainly wouldn't qualify for that, but I don't think that my income necessarily would be enough that I could afford insurance on my own, which is why I don't have it now. So I'm wondering what sort of a penalty I may face tax-wise if I end up being in a pinch where I don't qualify for any assistance by the government's definition, but still can't afford insurance on my own.
Yeah, I know, Julie, a lot of people have had questions about this penalty. So tease this out for us if you can. What's the answer here?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of questions there. First of all, who gets help? Within the exchanges, there's a sliding scale of assistance or subsidies. Mr. Salgado is correct. For an individual, the subsidies start at 100% of poverty, which this year is just under $11,500. And the help stops for people with incomes above 400% of poverty, which this year is just under $46,000. Obviously, the smaller your income, the more help you get paying your premiums.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there may in fact be cases where someone doesn't qualify for help or does qualify for help but still can't afford the premium. And those people in fact won't have to have insurance. The law says if you would have to pay more than 8% of your income on insurance, that's considered unaffordable and you'd be excused from having to pay any penalty. There are a bunch of other exceptions to the penalties too, including having a gap of less than 3 months when you don't have insurance. And officials can make case-by-case hardship exceptions for people who can demonstrate they truly can't afford coverage.
So Mr. Salgado, if his concern is he really can't afford insurance on his own, he might very well qualify for this this exemption from the penalty.
That's right.
Okay, and not have to have insurance.
That's right.
Okay, do we know yet how much this coverage under this new law will cost?
That's obviously one of the biggest questions that people have been asking. We're just starting to get premium information from some of the states. We won't have all of it till this fall. And it's going to depend on a lot of things, where you live, whether you want to pay a higher premium and have a lower deductible, or have a lower premium and a higher deductible. And of course, whether you're eligible for the subsidies we've been talking about. But from what we've seen so far, just from the few states, premiums for the standard so-called silver plan, that's the mid-level plan, seems to be averaging between about $200 and $400 a month. That's without subsidies.
And that's rough, though. I mean, we're going to have to hear a lot more details from the states.
Absolutely.
Well, we had several questions from people with coverage through the military or through the Department of Veterans Affairs. And they're wondering if they have to go out and buy private coverage now as well.
No. The law lays out several categories for what it considers minimum coverage that satisfies that requirement to have insurance. It's basically the coverage that about 80% of the population already has. Coverage through an employer, including COBRA or retiree coverage, Medicare, Medicaid, Children's Health Insurance Program, the VA, or TRICARE. If you have any of those kinds of health insurance, you don't have to do anything, and you will have satisfied that requirement to have coverage.
There's your answer from NPR's Julie Rofner. Well, we have more. Our next question, Julie, comes from Emily Lieberman of Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Now, she has insurance through her husband's job, but was wondering if the new law might give her family a better deal than she's getting.
It's very expensive. We pay a very high premium. And I'm not satisfied with the coverage, so I was wondering if we would be able to buy health insurance through the health insurance exchanges that will be available, or if those are only open to people who don't currently have coverage through an employer.
The short answer is probably not. You know how President Obama's been saying, if you like the coverage you have, you can keep it.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, that's turned out not to be the case. But that was really shorthand for saying this law was intended to mostly maintain the existing system where most people get their insurance through their job or through a family member's job. And to make sure that happened, for the first several years at least, individuals who are offered health insurance through an employer or a family member's employer are not allowed to go to the exchange instead, except in very limited cases, or they can go to the exchange, but they won't be eligible for any help in paying their premiums, any of those subsidies.
What are the very limited cases where they could go to the exchange?
If the premium offered by the employer costs more than 9.5% of their household income, and that's for the individual, not for the family, or if the employer's plan pays less than 60% of the cost of covered benefits, then and only then can the employee opt out of employer coverage and go to the exchange and get help instead.
Okay, so specific formula. We have one more question. It's about a part of the law a lot of people have been waiting for.
My name is Martha Hoff, and I live in Tacoma Park, Maryland. I have a question about the continuing impact of pre-existing conditions. I know that the insurance companies will no longer be able to turn down people with pre-existing conditions, but can they ask about them? And if so, will such people have higher premiums than those without them?
In a word, no. Starting January 1st next year, that won't be allowed. You can't be turned down. You can't be charged more. This will mean some healthy people will pay higher premiums to offset the cost of those sicker people paying less. But the whole idea of requiring most people to have coverage is to get more healthy people into the insurance pool to spread the risk more broadly.
Okay. Julie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll be doing this again every few weeks as the new health care law rolls out. And if you have questions for Julie, you can send them along to morningedition@npr.org.